Young and Indigenous Podcast is an outlet for people to know about Indigenous knowledge, storytelling, and history. Through our youthful journeys as Indigenous people, young people and elders share their experiences with us. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this.
Come listen to Plants, a podcast series featuring many different plant knowledge keepers with diverse perspectives and plant philosophies. A series brought to you by Children of the Setting Sun Productions and Cultural Survival Youth Fellow Opportunities.
Welcome back to Young and Indigenous Podcast. We are here on the first episode of the Plants podcast series featuring Anna Cook. Anna, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. Adultsa-Sitsta, Celestialot-Sitsta. My ancestral names are Adultsa and Celestialot, Swinup-Schud. I'm Swinomish. I am a Swinomish tribal member, and my mom is Lenora Cook. My father is Randall Cook. My grandpa on my mom's side is Marvin Wilbur Sr., and my grandmother is the late Joan Wilbur Pennier from Scowlitz, B.C. And on my dad's side of the family, he is Hualapai, Havasupai, Chemehuevi, and Cherokee, and they are from the Grand Canyon area and later relocated to the Bay Area. So that's a little bit about me. I currently work for the Deedgualich Wellness Center, which is my tribe's wellness center, and we service people who are going through recovery in substance use disorders and mental health as well. And so my job there is the Native Culture Coach, where I facilitate healing arts groups for clients, as well as helping coordinate the Wellness Garden.
How would you describe your relationships with the plants?
I would describe it in a growing sense, where when I first was introduced to plants in the kind of like studying them, I guess, I was about a junior in college, so this was maybe like 5 years ago. And when I started doing like the research and like opening up my mind to like what plants are in like more of like a scientific sense, I just felt like a deeper connection to not only myself, but also like my family. And it was really healing. And so I feel like I was at kind of like a time in my life where I was like, it was very transitional because I was about to graduate from college. I wasn't really fully sure what I wanted to do yet. All I knew is I wanted to help the community in one way or another. And the plants kind of just appeared in my life. And from there, I was able to just kind of grow with them, I guess. And from there, I'm just continuing the journey of learning about them and also healing myself and kind of just reconnecting and rekindling the relationship with my family, my ancestors, my culture, and myself with the natural world.
I see. You identify as a student of the plants. What have the plant relatives taught you? Would you be willing to give us examples of how these lessons are lived in your daily life?
Yes. So I think that when I think about the term like student of the plants, I actually think about being a student of life. And my grandpa is a perfect example of this because he and I actually almost share the same birthday. He was born on January 2nd and I was born on January 5th. So we often like have a family dinner together and it's really special. So this past year, he turned 85, and one of the teachings that he shared with the family is that every day he tries to learn something new. And so this was really humbling in a lot of different senses, because when I think about plants, a lot of the plant experts and knowledge holders that I've had the honor of and privilege from learning from, they've shared that you can study one plant your entire life and still not know everything about it. So I just try to keep my mind open every single time I go into the forest or I go outside and be open to learning something new and seeing what the natural world has to present to me, what Mother Earth wants me to find out or learn about myself or about its plants when I go out into nature.
That's beautiful. You are a huge advocate for safe harvesting practices and sustainable harvesting practices. Why is it important to harvest in the right way? Is there a deeper meaning to permissions from the plant relatives?
Yeah, so ethical harvesting is something that I feel like we need to talk about whenever we talk about plant medicines. And I feel very, very strongly about this because plant medicines are very exciting, but it's also very sacred too. And I feel like we can't step away from that. And like we need to focus on being able to acknowledge that these plants are living beings as well. And so I also think about like relationships and getting to know people and how when you get to know someone, you wouldn't just immediately ask to go to their house and go inside and like take all of their belongings and then leave, or like leave things disarray. Like that's disrespectful in a lot of different ways. So similarly, when it comes to plants, like I think that there's a protocol that needs to be followed. Like first being able to go out and to acquaint yourself with nature. And once you do that, being able to find which plants you gravitate towards and why do you gravitate towards those plants. And then from there, you're able to create that bond, that relationship, and then you'll have a deeper respect for it. And then from there, you can start your harvesting practice. And so I think once you, again, just create that really strong relationship, it will just kind of coincide with the respect aspect and also the ability to hold those ethical harvesting practices and the will to want to share those practices with other people. And so something else I think about when I think about ethical harvesting, and one reason why I'm really passionate about it, is because I've had a few instances when I've gone out to harvest and I've seen some things that have been really heartbreaking or disheartening. So one example of that is cedar harvesting. And this is really a sacred practice for a lot of natives, especially Coast Salish, because we are people of the cedar. A lot of the things that we use are from cedar, whether that's our jewelry or whether that is our canoes, our longhouses, or what we're cooking with or whatever it may be. So there's a lot of different uses for the blessed and sacred cedar. And so when it comes to ethical harvesting with cedar and seeing it harvested in not the right way, it obviously just like pulls at your heartstrings. And at one time I went up to our Swinomish UNA, and when we were up there, we witnessed some of the cedar trees, and they were harvested more than once from the same tree. And one of our practices is that you're only supposed to take from the tree once in its life. Otherwise, you have a higher probability of it not having a long livelihood. And so I'm just witnessing this. And like, honestly, I have a hard time harvesting cedar because when you're doing it, you're stripping it of its skin, of its outer layer. And so this is kind of an intense analogy, but I also think about like someone taking your skin, like your actual skin, and how you wouldn't want someone to do that.
What are some examples of ethical harvesting practices or the process that you do when you are harvesting?
Right, that's a great question. And so I think that it's definitely subjective to the individual. And so being able to find what resonates for you and what is applicable for what it is you're harvesting. But just some basic guidelines, definitely to avoid poisonous plants. So know what it is that you're harvesting. If you're not comfortable with the plants that you're harvesting, then maybe go with someone who is, and or find resources so you're able to properly identify whatever plant it is that you're looking for. The next one is to harvest from safe areas. And so this can also mean harvesting, or this is like one of the main parts of this one, is just to avoid harvesting from like roadsides or from industrial areas, domestic animal use areas, or other places that might have been sprayed with herbicides or pesticides. And so if it's also been heavily trafficked by like, let's say, dogs, or like maybe where animals might go to the bathroom or something like that, you obviously probably want to avoid that space. Another harvesting practice is to ask permission and stay mindful. And this one I feel particularly passionate about for a lot of different reasons. So making sure you acknowledge land it is that you're harvesting from is like a big component. And another thing is to be mindful, like if it is Indigenous land, which if you are in this area, it is definitely Indigenous land, to acknowledge that tribe in one way or another. And I would highly encourage you to be with someone of that tribe if you're in that space. Otherwise, I feel like you might be disrespecting the land because they might have a protocol that they follow. And so that's one thing that I always make sure to do. And so more times than not, I do my harvesting in Swinomish. But also just to stay mindful. And this also includes just, again, taking the time to get connected to the plants. Another one, which is a teaching I feel like I've been taught many times, which is to slow down and look around. And so how many plants are there? Are they healthy? How many can you harvest while still leaving a strong community? And then only harvest what you can use and process. So the harvesting process is very long and tedious for those who have been able to go out and do this. It's not just going out and getting lavender or going out and getting nettle or going out and getting rose and then just bringing it home and then immediately using it. A lot of the times there's a lot of other steps that go into it. And so a good rule of thumb is, for example, if you are harvesting wild rose, to only take a few petals so that the pollinators can still find them. Or if you're harvesting nettle, to only harvest the tops of them so that they continue to have new growth for the next season. And then if you are harvesting like licorice fern root, to maybe only harvest one for every 10 so that there are still 9 more that are able to grow. And so those are just a few little notes to think about and questions to ask yourself as you're harvesting. And then finally, probably one of the most important is, what can you give back? And so practice reciprocity. Give back to the land for what you can take. Some people leave a gift, a song, a prayer, or an act of kindness as thanks for the gifts they have received. And so for me, one gift that I often like to give is just time and space, because I think that a lot of us, you know, just want to be seen or heard. And so that's one thing that I like to try to give to the plants whenever I have the opportunity to, is to say their traditional name and to give them the space that they want and just simply acknowledge them for their being. And then if I do have a small gift, then maybe I'll leave, if we do have some from the garden or something, like some tobacco, or maybe there's a fallen cedar branch and I'll move one closer to the plant that it is I'm harvesting as like a thank you, or a tikkwit seed, or a daha dubsh.
Thank you. It's almost as if there's a relationship with these plants that exist, you know, and that's not what you would think of when you think of plants from a Western sense. Could you speak to this relationship?
Yeah, it's like the interconnectedness between the plants,
or more so the relationship between plant and people.
I mean, I think that for a lot of folks, it can be difficult to be vulnerable. It can be difficult to just fully let your guard down and to be who you want to be. But when you are out in the forest by yourself, you can be whatever you want to be without judgment. And so I think that that's one thing that I really love about the plants, is that you can tell them everything that's on your mind and they'll be there open-hearted, just listening to you. And then in turn, they give you so much medicine. And so it's a beautiful relationship. And the medicine that you're giving them is your healing and your ability to be vulnerable. And another piece of medicine, or I guess another piece of the relationship that you can think about, is like, how can you apply these skills to your relationships in real life? Like, how can you, for example, one book that I turn to quite a bit is Plant Teachings for Growing Social Emotional Skills. And this book is a collaborative project by GRUB and Northwest Indian Treatment Center. I highly encourage folks to check out this book, because here this book teaches us how to have good skills as humans and through plants, which I think is so special. And so, for example, there is nettle. And when we think about nettle, there are a lot of different components to it, but one of them that it teaches us is mindfulness. And with mindfulness, because if you go into a nettle patch and you're not mindful, then you obviously are gonna get stung. And then another one is it helps you build inner strength, because there's so much strong medicine in such a seemingly kind of like small plant that maybe you're not always aware of, but it actually holds some of the most medicinal benefits as any of our plants do from our native plant family. And then when I think about mint, there's clarity and focus. So being able to be mindful again of slowing down and taking a breath and thinking clearly, because mint helps us give us that energy and wakes up our body, but it also helps us slow down at the same time. And yeah, just drinking tea in general and having that connection is just a really special relationship as well. So, and then actually while we're talking about licorice fern, finding your voice, that is one plant that I've really connected to this like past like fall, the past couple of weeks, honestly. I was going on a walk with one of my friends and I noticed a wall of licorice fern and I was like, this is so beautiful. And when I was looking at it, I was thinking about the medicinal benefits of it and how it helps with your throat health. And so I was like, wow, like I wonder, like maybe this plant is appearing in my life right now because maybe I need to have a stronger voice when it comes to certain aspects of my life, or like maybe I need to speak up about certain things. And so I'm really grateful to CSSP for the opportunity to share my voice today and with whoever's listening about the importance of plants and creating relationships, strong and healthy ones.
Aishka, and thank you for being willing to share, because knowledge is medicine and this is like medicine of medicine. How could the world benefit from taking on the philosophy of being students of the plants?
I think that the world could benefit in that we would live in a healthier, world. So my mom has actually been doing a lot of research about blue zones recently. And so I'm not sure if you're familiar with them or not, but essentially what they are is spaces where there are folks who live above or exceed the age of 100. And due to like being able to live off the land, live with less electricity, and like living in more community and camaraderie with one another. And so like being able to, again, just take these lessons from the plants of being a kind neighbor, of being generous, of giving more than receiving. And
and you could speak to this in the sense of climate justice and climate action as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not to prompt you in that way, but just to maybe spark.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So one thing is like the blue zones and like being able to, just like want to live a healthier life and like have the desire of like wanting to live a good, purposeful, meaningful life. And one way to do that is to be more aware of what's going on right now. And so I mentioned earlier about like you could spend your life learning about one plant and still not know everything about it. And one of the reasons why that is because of climate change. And so it's really interesting, like when I think about horsetail, for example, that's been around since prehistoric times. And obviously it's changed quite a bit, I'm guessing, than when the dinosaurs were here. And so when you look at that plant and all of the different climates that it's had to adjust to, and like the state it's still in, and the fact that it's still able to give medicine is honestly really incredible. But if we keep a watchful eye for some of the ways that these plants are having to adapt due to animals becoming extinct or waterways becoming dry, or they're not being able to have like the same plant partners that it's surrounded by normally, all those things affect every single component, which again speaks to the interconnectedness of both us and also our plant relatives. Okay, so yeah, the huckleberry camps are an example of how climate change has affected our Swinomish community. And that's been really unfortunate because our community hasn't been able to have our annual trip up to our Swinomish Human Day to harvest huckleberries. And so that's been really unfortunate because we've been missing out on a lot of our mountain medicines. And we've been having to do like more trading and or just like not being able to have huckleberries, which has been the case of our family for the last couple of years. And then another example of climate change, of how it's affected Swinomish or our family. Let me see. I had another example, but it kind of slipped my mind because I was thinking about something else. Sorry.
That's interesting. Yeah. Huckleberries need a colder climate to thrive in.
I remembered. Yeah, they do. And it's just been like really hot, intense summers, and the winters like haven't been able to accommodate. And so like the seasons, like, and for example, we went on a walk like a couple weeks ago or last week, and like nettle was like still around. And it's just like interesting seeing it in different seasons when maybe it's, you know, not normally there. And then our community garden is another space that has been affected, not necessarily by climate change, but, you know, by the housing crisis, because that's been an issue. And so, like, obviously we're needing to develop and, you know, clear cut more areas, which again is affecting our entire ecosystem. And so, like, where we used to have natural shade over part of our bog that we have in our 13 Moons Garden, it is now unshaded. And so obviously some of the plants that are normally in that shady space, like, they're not able to get that shade anymore. And all those plants went into shock. And now they're currently not doing as well as they were before. And all the folks who are currently working there are having to accommodate and create more adjustments to accommodate for those changes.
Wow. That's really sad.
It is. But again, it's also helping with the housing problem. So it's like, what are you going to do in that situation?
Right. Pick and choose and push and pull.
It is. Which is another kind of point of like being able to accept like nature for what it is. Like, that's a great teaching that it teaches us, is like the ebbs and flows. Like, I think about our tides and how you, more than like, you have to go with it. Like, you just have to go with the flow. And if you, the more you go against it, like, it's gonna go against you as well. And so you have to be able to adjust, just as nature's been doing since time immemorial.
That was very well said. How could we, all beings, all human beings, be better students?
Yeah, I think like what we were talking about with regards to just being aware of what's happening in our natural world and knowing that those are also living beings. So unlike us, when we're thirsty, we can go grab a glass of water, but with plants, they don't have that same luxury. And so being mindful of knowing that they also have the same needs that we do, more times than not, of needing the love, the care, the sunlight, the soil, the space, and the water is another really big one. And so being able to help serve our plant community, they'll be able to help continue serving us. And so that's a really great teaching that I think the plants continuously give us. And another really great one is patience. I feel like I've continuously been taught this as I work with plants, is that nothing happens overnight. And if it does, then there's a lot more teachings that go into that, and it's not going to be that simple. And it shouldn't be that simple, because everything that's great and worthwhile takes time. And so I really love that and appreciate that about our plants and our natural world and Mother Earth. And another teaching that they give us is giving, and like they say that the wealthiest people are the ones that give the most, and our plants, they give so much. They're the most selfless beings on this planet by far, and they don't ask for anything in return, but they always get what they need at the end of the day. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here.
Yeah, thank you. And that's the next question. Plants really exemplify the value of humility. What could humans do better to model humility?
Right. When I think about humility with plants, I feel like one of the most humbling experiences that you can have in relationship with plants is harvesting. And so, again, going through the process of first practicing ethical harvesting practices, but from there, like creating that relationship and then harvesting and only taking what you need is like such a really big portion to this that I really hope drives home. And after doing that, taking what you need, going home and like going through the process of processing the plants is a lot. And so like that is humbling in the sense that you have to go through all of these steps to get this plant medicine, but that all of those steps is a part of the healing process as well. And that's part of the medicine that you receive as like a plant medicine maker. And so I feel really fortunate to have experienced this, and to have learned through different teachers the different ways that you can go about this. But I think that that is a very humbling experience, again, that you can learn from plants, is to go through the process of making medicine or go through the process of creating like a native food diet for yourself. Because it takes a lot of work for all the fishermen and fisherwomen out there. They also know how many steps it takes to go out to fish for crab or fish for salmon. It's not just as easy as going out and grabbing a few. Like, you go out and you grab some for the community and you give away your first harvest. And there's so many steps that go into it. And so continuing the mindfulness really helps connect it back to being humble through all of these steps.
Are there other plant characteristics that are overlooked when it comes to learning from plant relatives?
I mean, I would think about like the interconnectedness that is between all of the plant relatives that sometimes is overlooked, like when we look at salmonberry, and then when we look at wild rose, and then when we look at blackberry, they're all cousins. And so similarly, like when we look at each other, like we're all related as well. And so looking at all of these plants and knowing that they're a part of a much bigger family than we can even see, that meets the eye. And similarly, they also connect us back to our ancestors as well. And it's so special because when you go out and harvest salal, or when you go out and sit by the water, this is actually a teaching I learned this past summer in one of the trainings I went to through Grub, actually, an organization based in Olympia. Elise Crone and her crew do a wonderful job of being able to distribute the curriculum that they have, which is the plant teachings for growing social emotional skills. And one of the facilitators that was there, who's a mental health counselor, her name is Rachel Smart, she shared, when you go out next to the beach and you listen to the water, like those are the same sounds that your ancestors listen to. And so knowing that everything that we do when we go outside is connected to not only ourselves, but to nature, and then also to our ancestors. And so we're all in relation. And I feel like that's really comforting also. So if you're in need for grounding, which I think a lot of us need a lot of the time when we're feeling stressed out or overwhelmed, it's just, it feels really nice to know that there's a safe space for us when you go outside.
I'm out of questions here, but I actually have more questions
that come to mind.
Could you speak to some of your first memories with plants? It could be with your grandma, with your community, etc.
Yeah, I'd love to. So one of my first experiences going out to like the mountains, for example, I feel like that was like a really pivotal point for me. I brought my mom with me, my sister, and my brother, and I think my cousin also came with me. And it was so fun because it was like one of our first huckleberry camps. And so it was like one of our bigger trips going out harvesting. And one of the plants that I really connected to was fireweed. And it's just so tall and so beautiful and so bright. Like the colors of it are just absolutely mesmerizing. And so being able to see like a plethora of like all these different mountain medicines and then see fireweed in all of its beauty, that was just really inspiring to me. And then finding out all the medicinal benefits, like for your gut health and tightening gut tissues, and also helping with throat health, which I feel like almost a lot of our plants do. And then similarly, like going out and like knowing and being introduced to like mountain huckleberries too, was like really cool experience, because I realized like that really made my respect for my ancestors grow exponentially, because that is some really hard work. Like they're such little berries, and you can't go in there and you can't just like rake them all off. Like you have to do it one by one. I'm sure there are like better technologies or maybe techniques, but that was the way that I first did it when I first went up there. And I feel like in that process of being up there without any development, without any cars really around us, it just felt so pure, and I felt really, just really connected. And I think that that's something that was the healing that I needed at that point in my life. And so I loved that moment. And then I had another really similar experience when I went camas digging for the first time with my mom. And it's kind of fun because like all of the really great harvesting experiences that I've had, or a lot of them, have actually been with my mom. And so I really cherish her and value our relationship and dynamic. And so I'm really grateful that we're able to have that bond and that connection through harvesting. And with my grandmother, unfortunately I wasn't able to harvest with her very much before she passed away. But it's so interesting because after she passed, we went out to our backyard where she has a beautiful garden. That was one of her passions, was her garden. And we actually found that she fenced off a salmonberry shrub. And this was so special because I had heard through some of my teachers that this is something that our ancestors would do, is they would have their patches that they would return to, and they would actually create little garden or ecosystems that they would tend to and they would regularly visit. And so it just meant so much that my grandmother was able to have one, and I think that it just kind of appeared in our backyard and she was tending to it, and I thought that was so beautiful. So even after she had left that for us, and that was just a really beautiful sentiment, knowing that she's still with us to this day.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how your people traditionally or historically maintained or warded, or I guess lived symbiotically with our plant relatives?
So our people in Swinomish, we live by the seasons. And so I think a lot of indigenous communities have done this. And so one way that we were able to kind of do this was through the 13 moons calendar, or the lunar cycle. And so that is a practice that I've been trying to follow more closely. And so like right now, for example, we are in moon of the elk mating cry, which is such a beautiful time of the year. It's a season where we're supposed to embrace change, because it's when the leaves are starting to fall and when elk and wild game are becoming more prolific, and you're able to hear their cries and their calls, and the silver salmon are running through our waterways. And also there's licorice fir and there's Labrador tea. And so being able to be mindful of the different plants and the different activities that are relevant to this time period and living with the seasons. So this kind of actually goes back to the question that you asked previously about like how can we be essentially like better citizens in this world, is to live by the seasons and to live more mindfully. And so I love that Swinomish is able to bring this teaching back, and I really encourage folks to look back to see which type of calendar maybe their people used to use. And it was probably something really similar, if not the 13 moons calendar. I think in a lot of different Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities, they have used this, just with different names for the moons.
What is your favorite plant to harvest for any reason? And what is your favorite medicinal plant if it's not the same thing?
Okay. My favorite plants, like right now, that's a great question. Let me think about that for a second.
I know, it's kind of like, what's your favorite book?
It is. Yeah, I feel like there's so many. I need to think, which one am I really drawn to? I would say probably right now I've been really mindful and aware of madrona trees. And so madrona bark is something that is very medicinal for a lot of different reasons. In our community, we call it laughing bark or good mood tea because it has really relaxing properties, a great tea to drink before you go to bed, and has a really nice kind of like earthy, smoky flavor to it. That I really enjoy. And so that's one tree, I guess, that I've been really drawn to, as I mentioned. And another thing that has really caught my eye with this plant recently are the berries that are on it. And so right now, if you go out next to any of our water, like near like our ocean tidelandy areas on the cliff sides, you'll see these trees, and the way they grow and the way that they hold on to the cliff side without falling is truly incredible. Like, talk about strength. Like, it's mesmerizing, and you wouldn't assume that it's a native plant or a native tree, but it is. And I think that is so incredible that we're able to have these trees here. And so their berries right now are like a really bright orangey color, and they're just about to turn red. And so I'm really excited this year because I haven't done this for a few years, but I'm going to dabble with making jewelry with them. And so what you can do is you can actually harvest them. There's a lot of berries. They're not really great for eating, but you can add them to soups as thickeners, I believe. I haven't tried that either, but it's something I am intrigued by doing. The birds love them, but what you can do is when they turn red is you can take the berries off while they're still kind of soft, and you can thread them, and then they'll harden after you do that, and then they'll last for numerous years. I was gifted a pair of madrona berry earrings a couple years ago, like actually several years ago, and they're still intact. So I really cherish those, and I'd love to try to make some of my own, and also to give to other people. And so that's one plant I've been really connected to. And then another plant that I recently found out about is this really beautiful small plant called starflower. It's actually not in bloom right now. It's more so like a summer flower, but it's so stunning and it's so small. But something really unique about it is that all of the leaves on the base of the plant are actually different sizes. And so I think that that's a really important teaching for today's society, of that not everything has to be perfect and not everything has to be symmetrical, and beauty comes in all different shapes and sizes. And so I think when we think about society, there's such like a norm or a standard as to like what beauty looks like, for example. And when we look at our plants, like we would say that a rose is just as beautiful as lavender, as is a madrona tree or cedar, and they all look completely different. And so just kind of like stepping away from like that mindset, and again, turning more into what makes you feel good and what brings out good energy, and then what resonates with you. So those are two plants that I've connected to this year. And again, more seasonally, I guess, the madrona bark and the madrona berries.
Okay, I have another question. If you could ask Robin Wall Kimmerer any one question, what would it be?
I mean, I think just like an overarching question I would ask her is, what are ways that someone who is in the early stages of creating relationship with plants, how can we do that in a good way? And what are some practices that we can follow so that we can make sure that we're continuing to do that in a good way? Because I think that's something that I'm just so mindful of right now, is making sure that, you know, I am going through the right steps and through the right people, And asking multiple people always, like having, like I have so many teachers I could refer to. Like there are my teachers from Evergreen State College, Yvonne and Gary Peterson. There was one of the first plant people I ever met, Kimberly Miller from Skokomish. And there's also Elise Grohn, there's Valerie Segrist, and the list on, there's Rachel Smart. There's just so many people that I feel like have kind of come into my life and shared knowledge. And again, I just want to make sure that I'm paying homage and going through the right steps, as I am again in the very early stages of being a student of the plants. And so just continuing to make sure that I give credit where credit's due and am respectful to those who came and walked before me.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Young and Indigenous Podcast, the tee off for the plant series. And Anna, thank you for being willing to share your knowledge and your wisdom and your journey with the plants. Do you have anything you would like to share with the youth?
Yes. First off, Teakweed Seed, thank you so much, Roy and Free, for coming down to Swinomish and for having me come on this podcast. It's such a huge honor. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to share some of the teachings that I've been able to learn over the years. And I hope that some of it resonates in one way or another, even if it's just that, you know, there's so much to talk about with plants, or maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's something. Something hopefully will connect with you. And I encourage you to go out and to spend time. Actually, something that got me into plants originally when I was in college was my professors that I mentioned earlier, Yvonne and Gary Peterson. They had us do sit spots. And so once a week, they had us go out into nature for 20 minutes and find a spot that we can visit throughout the semester and just journal or write or draw. And I actually remember doing this when I was like in seventh grade. And so like being able to do that again as like an adult was just like a really kind of like interesting experience where it was like, I've done this before. And then it made me reflect on being a child and doing that when I was in seventh grade in my science class when we went on a field trip up to the mountains for an overnight hike. And so just again, I encourage everyone to go outside and bring a journal and just sit and just try doing it for just a short period of time and seeing what beauty can come of it. And being open to learning, being open to being wrong, being open to trying new things, and to just embrace who you are and know that there are people out there who care about you. And if you haven't met them yet, know that the plants care about you so much.
Y'all, thanks for tuning into this episode of the Plant Series. This episode has been produced by Roy Alexander, Free Borsi, Cyrus James, and Ellie Smith. Original soundtrack by Roy Alexander, Mark Nichols, and Free Borsi. Huge Heishgun thank you to the Charlie family from Stalis for lending us these songs for this episode. Additional music by Tanya Teton. Huge thank you to our funders, the Inatai Foundation, the Cultural Survival Fellowship, the Paul Allen Foundation, and the Whatcom Community Foundation. Young and Indigenous is a part of Children of the Setting Sun Productions. We are an Indigenous nonprofit set in the homelands of the Lummi and Nooksack people. How'd you go for listening? Later, y'all.